So this week's parsha is Parshas Pinchas, beginning on page 876. At the end of last week's parsha, the prince of the tribe of Shimon, Zimri ben Salu, took a Midianite woman, made it be known to everyone that he was going to cohabit with her, and as he was doing so, Pinchas, the son of Elazar, the son of Aaron HaKohen, went and speared them and killed them for doing so. Because of that, the plague killing so many people amongst the Jewish people stopped because of him. And in this week's parasha, Hashem tells Moshe's reaction to what Pinchas did. Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe leimar. Hashem spoke to Moshe saying, Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron HaKohen, Pinchas the son of Elazar, the son of Aaron the Kohen, Heishivas Hamasimi al b'nei Yisrael, he removed my anger from upon the Jewish people, B'kanoyas kanasi b'seicham, when he zealously avenged my vengeance amongst them, I did not destroy the Jewish people in my vengeance. Now Rashi comments, famous Rashi's comment, on the Torah telling us the lineage of Pinchas, that Hashem says to Moshe, Pinchas, son of Elazar, the son of Aaron, HaKohen, removed my anger. And the question is, why is it necessary for Hashem to have to mention his entire yichus? We already know his yichus. It was mentioned before. We know where he comes from. So why again is it being mentioned his whole lineage? So Rashi comments. This is the first Rashi, the top. Lefi shayu ashvatim avazim oisai, being that the tribes were putting him down. They were putting down Pinchas. They were putting him down for what he did. They did not accept what he did. Have you seen the son of this Puti? That his father's mother stuffed calves for the purposes of worshipping idols. And now he got up and he killed the prince of the tribe of Israel. They're putting him down. They were saying that he was unworthy of what he did. Why? Because he's a ben Puti. He's the son of Puti. Puti is from the word pitim, to stuff up. If you want to fatten up an animal, use the word pitim. And as we know, Pinchas was a grandchild of Yisrael. The same Yisrael who was the father-in-law of Moshe was the grandfather of Pinchas. And the Shvatim were saying, Pinchas, how could the grandchild of someone that stuffed these animals for the purposes of idol worship, now get up and kill a prince of the Jewish people? Therefore, the Torah came and repeated and laid out his lineage after Aaron. To go ahead and to counter the fact that the Jewish people were saying that how dare the grandson of an idol worshiper like Yisrael come and kill a prince of the tribe of Israel. For that, the Torah counters that and calls in Pinchas, the son of Elazar, the son of Aaron HaKohen. The Torah now stresses or points out his lineage, the fact that he came from Aaron the Kohen. So the question is, what's going on? How does everybody knew that on one side he's from Yisrael, and they know from the other side that he's from Aaron. What exactly is going on here that they shame him from the point that he's a descendant of Yisrael, and now the Torah counters that with the fact that he's a descendant of Aaron? Everybody knows he's a descendant of Aaron. What exactly is it trying to do by saying that here? Another question is that we know from the end of last week's parsha, when Pinchas kills Zimri, why did he kill Zimri? What gave him the right to kill Zimri? So the Gemara says that there's a halacha that Kanoi and Pagan Bai, someone who did what Zimri was doing, a Kanoi, one who is zealous for the honor of Hashem, he reacts very strongly in the honor of Hashem, has the right to kill the person for doing what he did. So, and the Gemara brings down that when Pinchas saw what was happening, he went over to Moshe, and he said to Moshe Rabbeinu, didn't you teach us that Kanoi and Pagan Bai, that someone who does this, a Kanoi, a zealous person, can kill that person for doing so? So Moshe Rabbeinu told him, basically, okay, you do it. You're the one who brought it up, you do it. And he did it. So Pinchas, what he did, Pinchas was fulfilling a halacha. So what exactly, I mean, a halacha that was for himself, you know, for the fact that it was a kanoi. You have to be someone who's truly zealous honor of Hashem to do so. It's not something that anybody can do. It's not even something that a Beis Din, the rabbinical court, would do. But again, he was doing what he did based on halacha, based on Jewish law. And if so, what was their problem? What was their whole complaint about him? It's also interesting to note that they call him the descendant of Yisrael who worshipped idols. And therefore, for some reason, that now says that he can't do what he did now. And we have to explain that. But we also know that Yisrael dropped the idol worship, right? We know that he dropped it. And it's interesting that they're still bringing it up. So the explanation, so the Sefer Shari Ora explains in the following way. So we have to understand, you know, again, Pinchas seemingly was acting with halachic basis, and therefore, what are they complaining about against him? So the Shari Ora explains, based on a medrash by Akedas Yitzchak, when Avraham took Yitzchak to bind as a sacrifice, and he was going to bring him up as a sacrifice. So the Medrash says that the Satan, the Yetzer, the inclination, was trying to convince him not to do it. And one of the arguments that the Satan, that the angel tries to take us away from serving Hashem, one of the arguments that he made to Abraham is that tomorrow you're going to be called a murderer. Tomorrow, you Abraham, will be called a murderer for what you did to your son. And Abraham's response was, "Afal pikein, even so." Now, what is the Satan trying to do here? What is the point? You're going to be a murderer. I'm going to be a murderer. I'm doing what Hashem said I should do. So the Shari Ora brings an explanation that for Abraham to be able to do what he had to do, meaning Hashem told him to do it. But for Avram to be able to do what he did and not be considered a murderer, it was only if he did it with his intentions being completely l'shem shemaim, completely for the sake of heaven. If somehow or another, while he's doing this to Yitzchak, some thought other than serving Hashem gets involved in this, somehow or another there's going to be some kind of thought that once he's killing his son, that somehow or another, some kind of feeling about killing other than the purpose of serving Hashem, it would get mixed into what he's doing. Or perhaps the Satan meant if he would have some kind of feeling of regret for what he was doing. If there would be any point that Abraham, while he was slaughtering his son, even though he had a mitzvah to do it, and he was doing the mitzvah, but if at some point his intentions are off, then he would lose, so to speak, his permission to do what he did, and he'd be a murderer. If somehow or another his thoughts would deviate, other than doing what he's doing, l'shem Hashem, for the sake of Hashem, either somehow or another some other kind of thought gets into his mind while he's doing it, or perhaps it means he's not doing it completely, full-heartedly, once he's not doing it the way he's supposed to do it, he can't do it anymore. So that means that the Satan was saying to Abraham that basically Hashem is asking you to do something that's impossible, right? You're really going to be able the entire time that you're slaughtering the son to have the complete and full intention of serving Hashem without question. Do you really think you could do that? Because, by the way, if you don't do it, you'll be a murderer. So what the Satan was trying to convince Abraham or discourage Abraham was by saying, look, you're going to be called a murderer tomorrow. There's no way you're going to be able to keep your thoughts 100%. Avraham's response was, Afal pikein, I have a mitzvah, I've been commanded by Hashem, and I have to give it a shot. I have to do that. I have to do what Hashem wanted me to do and do my best to do it the right way. And Kumi Avraham was saying, and if I mess up, I mess up. But this is what I have to do, and I have to try to do it the way that I can. But the point is that one thought off, even though you're supposed to do what you're supposed to do, but one thought off could actually disqualify you from the whole act. So what the Jewish people were saying about Pinchas is that they couldn't believe that when Pinchas now is killing Zimri, He was doing it only full-heartedly, l'shem shemayim, for the sake of Hashem. He couldn't believe it. Why? He's a ben puti. He's a descendant of an idol worshiper. And it's true, Yisrael already dropped the idol worship. But when you worship idols, and when you become a serious idol worshiper, as Yisrael was, you develop certain traits. You develop certain corruptive traits. You know, an idol worshiper if you're an idol worshiper, you can be a murderer, right? For their idol worship, they used to sacrifice human beings in idol worship.
But that was Yisrael, not him.
No. Oh, one second. Right? You could go ahead and you can develop character. You can develop very bad character, very corruptive character traits. And as we see in many places, those kind of traits can be passed on to next generations. If you spiritually corrupt yourself, those corruptions get into your gene system and you can carry and pass them on to your children. We find that similar by when Abraham told Eliezer not to take from the Canaanim. It's because their midas, the character traits that they had in them, would be passed on to the children. And even though Yitzchak was the father, and whoever Yitzchak would go ahead and marry would have to be a fine person. But there's a certain spiritual genetic system that we have in us, and we pass it on to our children. And therefore, the Jewish people couldn't believe that Pinchas, a fine person, no question about it. But Pinchas, who wasn't that far removed from his grandfather, was an idol worshiper. He still has within him these kinds of traits. And if he has in them these kinds of traits, they could not accept that what he did it fully, l'shem shamayim, did it fully for the sake of heaven. That when he was going and he was killing Zimri, that he was doing it without any other kind of motivation, without any kind of feeling mixed into what he was doing. Because if Pinchas, while he was doing it, got angry. He did it out of, if at one point he got angry, not because he's serving Hashem, not because of honor of Hashem, but somehow or another mixed into what he's doing. Of course, it takes a lot to go in and murder, to kill someone. And if now mixed into what he's feeling while he's doing it, that is some kind of thought that's not about serving Hashem. It's about anger. It's about maybe even some little level of bloodthirstiness that again comes out of the fact that his grandfather was an idol worshiper.
Great-grandfather
was an idol worshiper. And this was passed down to him. They could not accept that Pinchas, who again, was a fine person, but at this point of time wasn't necessarily from the greatest individuals of the people. We don't find him anywhere until now. He wasn't one of the princes. He wasn't even one of the spies. I mean, okay, spies, Levi didn't have a spy. But he wasn't one of the princes. Right, so Pinchas is not necessarily from the highest people of Klal Yisrael, and here he goes and he kills a prince of the tribe of Shimon. The princes of the tribes were great people. Now again, clearly he did something very controversial, but he was a great man. Where did Pinchas get to do this? They didn't feel that he was worthy enough to do it, and if he did it, it must have been that part of his motivation to kill Pinchas actually wasn't so much l'shem shemayim for the sake of heaven, but actually was an act of anger. It was an act that came from the character, the corruptive character traits that his great-grandfather had passed down to him. And therefore, they were ready to accept that even if we know Pinchas said that he was doing it because of the law of Kanoi and Pagimba, that this act, the Kanoi, a zealous person, can kill the other person for doing that, they just couldn't accept that Pinchas was really doing it completely for the sake of heaven. And that he wasn't acting out of anger, or of some level there wasn't some kind of level, or even bloodthirstiness that was mixed in to what was driving him here. So therefore, they said, they were mavazahim. They put him down. They said, Ben Puti, the descendant of this person who worshipped idols, how could he have done such a thing? So what does the Torah counter? The Torah counters and says, Pinchas, the son of Elazar, the son of Aaron HaKohen. This act that he did was not an act that comes from his lineage to Yisrael, but it actually comes out of his lineage from Aaron. And that he was not doing it out of bloodthirstiness, out of anger. but rather was doing it out of the honor of Hashem, because this act that he did was not an act that had to do with the character that he inherited from his great-grandfather Pinchas, but rather it has to do with the character and the traits that he inherited from his grandfather Aaron. Now we have to explain, though, okay, what is it about Aaron? How did Aaron get mixed in here? What is it about Aaron that gets mixed in here? Now, again, we said before that the Torah is trying to say, no, it's not about Pinchas, it's about Aaron. Okay, well, what do you mean it's about Aaron? What about Aaron is part of how does Aaron's legacy, how does Aaron's traits that he passed on to Pinchas, how is that affecting Pinchas now? So we know there's a famous Mishnah in Pirkei Avos that says, Heve me tamidiv shal Aaron, be from the students of Aaron. Oyev shalom, he loves peace. V'raydiv shalom, he pursues peace. He loves people. Aaron pursued peace. He loved peace. He pursued peace. Aaron was a peace-loving person. But Aaron understood that in order to be a peace-loving person, you have to understand that the highest form of peace for the Jewish people is for them to have shalom between them and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the most important shalom that there has to be. And shalom between people cannot be at the cost of shalom between the Jewish people and Hashem. Now, if you look at that, if you look at Pinchas' act, he killed someone. All right, he had to do it. And Hashem says, next pasuk, Hashem says, "Lachain emar, say to Pinchas, hinei ne'asin lo yabrishi shalom, I'm giving him my covenant of peace." Covenant of peace? Pinchas didn't do an act of peace. He did an act of violence. Okay, he had to do what he was supposed to do. Why is he being rewarded with peace? And the answer is because what we looking at Pinchas' act as an act of violence, and the Jewish people saw it that way. But the truth is, no, Hashem is saying, I'm giving you my covenant of peace. Pinchas did an act of peace, not an act of violence, because he brought peace back between the Jewish people and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Jewish people had been straying after the Moabite women. They strayed after idol worship, and it was Pinchas' act that stopped the plague, because Pinchas' act of standing up for the honor of Hashem brought the Jewish people back to Hashem. He now created peace between them and Hashem, and therefore he is following the character of Aaron, because Aaron is a person who loves peace. He pursues peace. Aaron wants peace. But Aaron understands that that peace has to be peace between Hashem and the Jewish people, and that can't come at the cost. Of peace between man and man. There will be times that there will be a lack of peace between people, because sometimes one person has to stand up against the other person without acting against the Ribbono Shel Olam. It will not promote a good relationship between the two when that one person does it. But that's not because he's not a peace-loving person. He's a person that understands that true peace can only come to the Jewish people if they're at peace with Hashem. And Pinchas' act should not be seen as an act of violence, but as an act of peace, because he brought HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the Jewish people back to have shalom. And there's a famous explanation from the Chassam Sefer, it's a homiletical interpretation on that Mishnah, that it says, Heve mi talmidim shel Aaron, be from the students of Aaron, Oyev shalom, he loves peace. V'raydev shalom. Raydev shalom literally means, and pursue peace. But we also know that in the Gemara, if you're called a raydev, what does it mean you're a raydev? It means you're running after someone to murder them. Right. You're running after them to kill them. So the Chassam Sefer says that Aaron understood sometimes you have to be a raydev shalom. Sometimes you have to be the person who's pursuing after shalom, to be the person who appears like he's running after shalom to break it, to destroy it. Because he's getting up and he's standing against people and quarreling with people and fighting against people. But when he's doing it for the sake of the Ribbono Shel Olam, then you will not be pursuing peace amongst one another. Rather, your main objective is going to be to create peace between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the Jewish people. And that is what Pinchas did, and therefore the Torah stresses Pinchas' lineage from Aaron to say, no, this act was not an act as part of his lineage from Yisrael, but rather as part of the spiritual inheritance that he inherited from his grandfather Aaron of loving peace and promoting peace.
How does Pinchas go off later on? He didn't go after what was his name?
Yiftach?
Yeah, with Yiftach.
Well, how did he go off? He made a mistake. He didn't do what he was supposed to do. I mean, that happens. Right now, he did what he was supposed to do. He did a great act. He was rewarded. As time went on, whatever reason he didn't go over to Yiftach, he didn't go over. You know, it happens.
There's a girl that's suffering.
Yeah, okay.
But he did stop the plague.
Correct.
So, he did something positive.
Correct.
What did he say? He should have done it, and the people should have died.
It's an interesting question. That's a very interesting question. Why isn't it the fact that the plague stopped from what he did? Why wasn't that enough of a sign to say that he didn't have a right to do it? That's a good question. I have to think about that.
And also, we asked Moshe first. Moshe says, okay.
That doesn't mean that they heard him. Doesn't mean they heard him ask Moshe. I think maybe they didn't know who he asked Moshe. But at the same time, and even if he did, you know, that's a good point. If they would have known he asked Moshe, it would also have been hard for them to complain. I would say that I wouldn't be afraid to argue and say they didn't hear him talk to Moshe. But the fact that after his act it stopped the plague, that's an interesting point. That's something I have to think about. Good. Okay. Now,
one question?
Yeah.
How can they bring the argument of heritage against Pinchas when their own heritage goes back to Avram, whose heritage is idol worshippers? Just a quick, I don't have any thoughts about it. It just seems inconsistent. So.
Well, that's an interesting point. Martin's question is, you know, Avraham Avinu also at one point, okay, assuming that at one point he did worship idols, let's assume.
Avraham's heritage, his father, his grandparents, or whatever.
Okay. So either because it could be that, you know, somewhere it's brought down that Avraham was born anew and he had no, so to speak, lineage back to that. Another answer may very well be that they could have believed that Avraham eradicated from himself any of the vestiges of idol worship left in him, while they didn't believe that Yisrael did that. And therefore, they were more, therefore they questioned Pinchas more. That's an interesting point. I don't know. Okay. Now, so what is, so let's continue reading. Pasuk Yud Gimel. V'hayi salo lazari acharav, and it shall be for him and his children after him, v'ris kohuna as oilam, a covenant of eternal kohuna, tachas asher kinei lai v'ikav, because he acted zealously for his God, v'yechaper al b'nei Yisrael, and he atoned for the Jewish people. So the reward here is, as Rashi explains, that Aaron, that Pinchas was given kahuna. Now the question is, you know, Pinchas should have already been a Kayin, right? If he's a descendant of Aaron, he should be a Kayin, correct? So Rashi tells us no. Sha'af b'shekvar nitna kahuna lazarish shal Aaron, even though the kahuna was already given to Aaron's children, lo nitna elo la'aron ulabanav shenim shechu imay. It was only given to Aaron and his sons that were anointed with him, and to any children they have after being anointed. But Pinchas that was born beforehand, and was never anointed, and was not anointed, he did not come to being a Kohen until this point. So somehow or another, when Aaron was being appointed as a Kohen, and he was being anointed, it was only for him and his children, and any children born afterwards. But Pinchas was already born before, so he was left out.
Right.
So the question is, you know, why? You know, why was Pinchas left out? Why, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu was giving kahuna to Aaron and his children, why was it only to the children? Why not to the grandchildren also? Why was it only to the grandchildren born afterwards? So I saw an interesting explanation brought down for Rabbi Gedal Yeshua. Remember him?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Rabbi Gedal Yeshua.
I gotta tell you something about what being here.
Okay.
Him. Go ahead.
Laser. Remember Gedal Yeshua. Rabbi Gedal Yeshua from Tari Yeshiva Tari Vadas. So I thought I didn't see it inside the Sefer. I saw it brought down. See, he says that there is a halacha that if a kayan murders someone, he may not duchen anymore. And I think there is a discussion that says that goes even as far if he did it accidentally. So he wanted to say that if Pinchas would have been anointed as a kayan beforehand, and now he would have gone ahead and he would have killed Pinchas, he would have been disqualified from being a kayan. Which interestingly means that what he's, according to this, is that there's a difference between a kayan killing someone accidentally and if a kayan has a mitzvah to kill someone. You know, I don't know if when this is brought down in the Hilchos Birchos Kayanim, they discuss a situation when it was a mitzvah, meaning a situation where, let's say, you know, one person was running after another person to kill him, and therefore the kayan now went to go and save this person's life, which he's supposed to do. So it was 100% permissible for him to kill the person. Is he still disqualified? You know, I don't know. But, I mean, based on this idea, it comes out that even when the kayan is doing a mitzvah by killing, he'd still be disqualified. Therefore, the Rebbeinu Shalom didn't have Pinchas become a kayan right away, so that later on, when he would actually do this act of killing Zimri, he wouldn't be disqualified from being a kayan, because he wasn't a kayan yet. If you're a kayan and you kill someone, you're disqualified. If you're not a kayan yet, then it doesn't disqualify you. Then it's not going to affect when it becomes a kayan later. So it comes out that Pinchas' intention, according to this, Pinchas was left out of the kahuna because Rebbeinu Shalom knew what the future held for Pinchas, and therefore he didn't let Pinchas become a kayin in order that he should later on be able to do what he did.
He must have been a kid at the time.
Nope. I mean, this is 38 years later.
I mean,
this is towards the end of the 40 years. That's at the beginning of the 40 years.
Yeah, right.
So again, we don't know exactly how old he was, but okay. Now, so
that's it.
There is, we mentioned a Gemara before that says. And this is brought down. This relates to the end of last week's parasha. That before Pinchas went and killed Zimri, he said to Moshe Rabbeinu, "Didn't you teach us, right? Hanayim Poygenbay?" And I believe that Rashi there brings down. Just 1 second. Right, Rashi brings down. Look back on page 874. Rashi brings down. It's about 6 lines from the bottom. Vayar Pinchas. Ra Maise v'niskar halacha. Pinchas saw what was happening and remembered the halacha. Amar lo Maise v'kublani mimecha habayel aramis kanoim paiginbay. Right? This is the way I mentioned. That kanoi is allowed to go ahead and kill him. Amar lo, he told him, Krayna di garta, the one who carried the letter, brought the letter, I don't remember exact definition of the word kraina digarta. But the bottom line is, he says, you brought it up, you do it. Now, really, I wanted to point out the Rashi before. Rashi before, when it says, Vahema Baichim, you know, when Zimri came and he brought the Midyanis, it says they were crying. So what happened? Rashi says, this Amimenu Halacha. Moshe forgot the Halacha. He forgot this Halacha that really he could kill Zimri for doing this. Go Kulim Abuchia. So they all cried. Now, Ba'egel, Rashi points out, at the chaitzen of the golden calf, Amad Moshe Keneged Shishim Ribay. Moshe Rabbeinu set up against 600,000 people that were involved in the sin of the golden calf. Shenemar Vayitchen Ad Ashadok. He ground it up until it was, he ground up the eagle. That means Moshe Rabbeinu had no fear of anybody there when he took the eagle, what they worshipped, and he ground it into dust. Right? The Kan Rafi Yadav, all of a sudden here he falls apart? Why is he falling apart here? Ela Kedei Sheyavai Pinchas Vayitas Haroiloi. The point, what happened here was, in order that Pinchas should come and take what he deserved. I mean, according to this, why did Moshe Rabbeinu forget the halacha? So that Pinchas would have the chance to do what he did. It was the HaKadosh Baruch Hu was giving Pinchas, the Baruch Hashem decided that this is Pinchas' chance to claim his claim to fame. This is his chance to do something something unique, something that he could do. And therefore he took it away from Moshe Rabbeinu so that Pinchas could do it. Which meant that basically it was meant for Pinchas to do, and the Rabbeinu Shel Olam was creating the situation that he should be the one to do it. He created Moshe Rabbeinu, forgot the halacha. Pinchas now is given the opportunity to be the one to remember the halacha and to carry it out.
How does Pinchas know what they're doing? They're inside.
Everybody knew what they were doing. Everybody knew. Everybody knew.
He didn't knock
that's
on
what
the
it,
door and
that's
say,
what it means. That's what it says. Vayakrev el echavas abinyanis aynei Moshe. That's what it means. Everybody knew what he wanted to do. And then he took her
to do it.
Everybody knew what he planned in doing, and he walked in there and he did it.
Well, he came up to the people, to Moshe, he says, you married the... Can I do it?
I thought that the entire tribe of Shimon was rebelling in this regard.
Well, the entire tribe of Shimon seemed to have been, not only the entire tribe, but many of the tribe of Shimon were involved in this, in being seduced. So they went to Zimri and they said, do something for us.
I think they lost in the plague. I think it was...
Fine.
They who lost the 20,000 people.
That could very well be.
That's
so,
one opinion, I don't know.
Fine. But the point is that they, you're right, it says that they definitely suffered a lot. They went to Zimri, they said, do something. So what did he do? He basically did what they did. Now there's all discussion why Zimri did what they thought, why he did what he did.
I'm just bringing this up to say, just to point out that it must have been widely known, if it's not just Zimri, if it's the tribe of Shimon, then everybody knows what's going on.
Not necessarily about this specific act. I mean, Rashi brings down, he said to Moshe, is this woman permissible? Moshe says no. So then Rashi says, so who let you marry a Midianite woman? So it was very clear what he was planning on doing. And then when he took her into the tent, it was understood. So Pinchas went and he reacted to that. Now, what's interesting about this whole, what I want to bring out from here is the fact that from Pinchas, we see that you can have an individual who may not be the greatest of the people, but when an opportunity comes for him to do something, he gets up and he does it. Meaning there are times where, again, you're not the leader, you're not the greatest, but you see something that has to be done, and you get up and you do it, even though nobody else is doing anything about it. No one else was reacting to this. So Pinchas felt that, look, something has to be done here. Now he looks around, Moshe's not doing anything, no one else is doing anything, why should I do it? But he understood that it doesn't make a difference who you are when it comes to doing something for the honor of Hashem. If you understand that it's supposed to be done, it could actually very well be, as we see from Rashi, that it's destined that you do it. This is your destiny. You're the one who Hashem wants you to do it. And therefore, even though it's happening around you, no one else is doing anything, you get up and you do it. Interestingly, Pinchas still went ahead and he asked Moshe. He went and he asked Moshe about doing it. And that was because, I always understood that he went and he asked Moshe. You know, typically, if you're a kanoi, if you're a zealous person, right? You don't go ask a shayla, right? If you're truly that zealous person who could be doing this act, you don't go and say, can I do this? Because if you're a zealous person, you're truly zealous, then you react. But I always thought that Pinchas did ask because, not because he had a question about did he have a right to do it, but he wanted to know why Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't doing it. He wanted to know what else was doing it. And he went over to Moshe and he said, didn't you teach us this? Meaning before he was going to do it, he did take notice of the fact that those greater than he didn't do so. And therefore, he felt he had to ask. Moshe Rabbeinu told him, no, you do it. So you've got this, we see that you could have this individual, again, not the greatest of the people, but a person who sees that something has to be done, and he gets up and he does it, even though no one else is doing it. At the same time, if no one else, even greater than him, is doing it, he needs to understand why, needs to ask. There's, I'm sure many of you have heard of Sarah Schneer, the woman who founded, you know, what's called the Beis Yaakov movement, the established educational system for girls in Eastern Europe. She started that first, what we call Beis Yaakov school, and many followed after that.
She went there.
And she, before, now again, for whatever reason, there was not a formal, that Jewish girls were not receiving a formal education, at least in Eastern Europe. They were not receiving that. Why? Separate discussion. That's not the discussion, but they weren't. And Sarah Schneer looked around and was seeing what was happening to the young girls, that they were falling away because they weren't getting a Jewish education. So she decided she is going to start a school. But before she did it, she asked the Chafetz Chaim if she should do it, and she asked the Ger Rebbe of that time if she should do it. And they both told her no. They both told her no. And she didn't do it. But she went back a second time. You know, she respectfully went back a second time.
The second time
they said yes. Which means, again, you know, you have to, sometimes you've got a person feels that something has to be done. It has to be done. And they're ready to do it, even though no one else has done it. They're ready to do it. But before they're going to do what no one else has done, one has to keep that in mind. Why haven't people greater than her, leaders greater than her, why haven't they done it? Okay, so she has to go, and she asked to ask advice from the leaders. And even if they said no, she still deep down knew what had to be, and she went back again. And if they would have told her again no, she would have accepted the no. There's no question about it. But she was an example of a person who understood something that had to be done, and she did it, even though no one else around her was doing it. I just want to conclude with a story. I've said this story before, but again, it shows that there are times where, you know, the Pashut dimension, the simple people, right? When they know something is right, they get up and they do it. So, if I remember the story correctly, this story took place with the Brisk Rav, Rav Yitzchak Zev Soloveitchik, when it's still the Rav of the city of Brisk in Europe. And it seems that in the main shul in Brisk, there was a choir. And basically, you know, the Chazan had his place, and the choir was next to the Chazan. So, somebody, again, with the power to do so, decided that we're going to take the choir and we're going to elevate them. We're going to elevate them. We're going to position them higher up, which was something that resembled more like what the Reform did than what should be done. So, the Brisk Rav heard about it, and he wouldn't allow it. And at one point, he said he's not coming to shul. But then he decided, no, he's got to come to shul because he's going to do it, this person. I don't know if it's the gabbai, the president, whatever it was. So he comes to shul, and he sees that the choir has been positioned higher than the chazan, and he goes over to them, and he says, you got to come down. And the rav says to come down, you come down. The other person, whoever it was, the gabbai, the president, goes over to them and says, go back up. So they went back up. And the rav said, go down. They went down. The one said, go back up. And this was going on for a while. And finally, the Brisk Rav felt that he just can't keep doing it. All of a sudden, from the women's section, some woman starts screaming down at the other person, "Du shegetz, how do you treat the rav like that? How can you do such a thing?" And she settled it. She settled it. So it wasn't the rav that was able to settle it. It wasn't the other prestigious members who were able to settle it. It wasn't the men who settled it. It was a woman from the lady section. Because she understood what's right, and she got up and she did what was right. And that's the lesson of Pinchas. The lesson of Pinchas is that there are times where you could have someone that's not the most prestigious person, but if the person understands there is something that's right to do, they do it. And there are times when before they do it, they need to ask whether they should do it or not. But that doesn't stop them. It doesn't mean, though, that they shouldn't ask, and shouldn't be ready to do it.